This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 466, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Merry Christmas, baby. Should it treat me nice? Merry Christmas, baby. Should it treat me nice?
Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 466. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and joining me are Paul Montgomery.
Ho, ho, ho.
And Josh Flanagan.
Whoop, whoop.
Well, you made it, Josh. Under the wire.
I did. There was some air travel. There was some anxiety.
I had a whole bit ready in case you were stuck in an airport and you didn't do a show.
The escape from San Francisco, as I like to call it, was fraught with a great deal of turbulence. Because we were like escaping the storm. I like to picture myself like John Cusack
sure.
in 2012, basically. Mm-hmm. I drove a limo for a while. the plane bounced around a lot. I thought, oh, is this going to be one of those planes where I actually get sick on? I didn't. I made it. I just went to sleep instead. So,
well, this is the last iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast of the year, 2014. We'll be back in January. We'll get to that at the end of the show. But so we thought we'd make sure all of us were on the show just to celebrate the year that was the Pick of the Week podcast. Until we get to that point, this is a review show. We're talking about spoilers. So if you haven't paused, if you haven't read all your books, pause the show, come back. I can't hear myself talk. So this is going to be fun. if you're worried about spoilers, pause the show, come back, and the coast will be clear, and then you won't be angry. And then we will have a happier life, which is really all, which everything's about these days, is making our lives happier.
Can you hear us, or is
I hear
it just
you guys?
Your
it's
voice?
Fine.
You can.
I'm using different headphones, and they are the kind that make me lock into your head, and I can't hear myself.
Oh, okay.
So it's fun.
You should get other headphones.
I left them at home.
You should or type everything you're saying as you say it.
That'll be fun for the listeners.
It'll be fun for the listeners. Exactly.
It's not. It's not like you've been doing this for a while.
You'll be like film The Net.
I thought I had the headphones.
I outraced a storm across the country to be here. I slept 4 hours, and you're over here with this fucking amateur bullshit, and I don't have time for it.
Well, that's fine. I think everyone would be okay if you walked away.
There's a lot of humbuggery going on in this episode. I think we should all cheer up.
This is be the one where I snap very slightly over a little thing. It's like, God, that was weird. Josh was really that was uncomfortable, wasn't
Uncle
it?
Josh ruined Christmas.
Again. Paul, you had the pick.
I did have the pick, the last pick of 2014, and it is the much-awaited return of Afterlife with Archie. It's Afterlife with Archie number 7, and in the world of Afterlife with Archie, which, as you may recall, has been overtaken by zombies, it's been 4 weeks. So that's sort of the distance between issues 6 and 7 and when they left Veronica's dad's big mansion, when they left that estate, because that just went horribly wrong. And now they're out wandering in the woods, basically. And this issue, a lot of it is narrated by Betty, who is writing in her diary. She's been keeping a diary for many years. And it's always been sort of fraught because She wrote about her mean sister Polly, who just had some issues. Older sister Polly did not like Betty too much and actually made them change rooms when Archie moved into the house next door so she could ogle the new ginger in the neighborhood. And then when Archie wasn't waving back to her or watching her get undressed, I guess, she decided Betty can move back into that room because she's bored.
This book dives back into the deep end of the psychological pain. You remember when this book started, we really had some creepy issues and we got sort of focused on the zombies and then Sabrina's journey. But we jump back into domestic violence, incest, all kinds of extramarital affairs. I mean, this is the
It's a really dark issue. There is a zombie Riverdale. Attack in here, and you do see, you know, some like Cthulhu, like Eldritch kind of monsters in that everyone has a shared nightmare about Sabrina. They're wondering, why doesn't Sabrina just show up and wrinkle her nose and make everything go away and go back to normal? And so like, well, I think Sabrina's got bigger problems to deal with. She's fighting octopi underwater and being sacrificed for some occult rite. And so there's so much going on here. There's so many different threads. But I think one of the things I really liked about this issue was the Betty and Veronica and Archie triangle is really coming to a head. And the fact that they have zombies on their heels is only making it, you know, more tempestuous, you know.
Well, Archie is basically at this point chosen Betty. He goes off with her to the woods. They walk with her holding hands. To Veronica's chagrin. Now, this arc is called Betty R.I.P. And if they kill Betty, I'm going to freak the fuck out. I'm just warning everyone in advance.
It was huge in the first issue. They kill off Jughead right away.
Cholesterol was going to claim him eventually.
He had a very high metabolism. He was doing okay.
It was a high-fat, low-sugar diet.
Yeah. But it's also funny with Jughead, they've been calling him Jug Dead, and he died like a month ago. And he was their friend.
Which seems insensitive.
It seems a little bit insensitive, but they've been referring to him as Jug Dead. And
I mean, it's your best friend. He's only been dead for a couple of weeks, and he's still chasing you.
It's kind of fucked up. But he is following them.
Right.
Like, a lot of times, if your best friend becomes a zombie, like, it's only for, like, an episode, and then they're dealt with. This is one of those zombies that sticks around. They haven't managed to get rid of Jughead, and he seems to be leading the other zombies along. He seems to
they're
be, like,
not
the
as
alpha
good as
zombie.
Zombies as, say, Rick Grimes in history.
They're not very good, but the one thing I also like is that Kevin Keller is super into this whole thing. And so that when they're having a funeral for all of the people that have died and they basically set out planks for them, they don't even have bodies to bury, and they're just going to say some words about them, and they even recite some lines from Our Town because they did a production of that. Although that was a fun kind of reference and fun kind of detail. Then the zombies finally descend on them, and Kevin Keller's like, "Horde!" and for a minute, everybody's like, "What?" And he's like, "Why couldn't you have just yelled zombies?" He thought it would be more dramatic if you had a horde.
Also, Jughead catches an arrow that's shot at him. So this is no, you know, minor thing they're dealing with here. They got some serious zombie problems. But to me, you know, this is all about Betty's narration, looking back. What she's doing is trying to recreate her diary because she lost them all in the zombie attack. So she got a blank one from Mr. Smithers.
Who has everything. He has chalk in his backpack.
And so she's been trying to remember her life and rewrite it in the diary. But then we sort of dip into the Cheryl Blossom family, which if you recall earlier, was the creepy incestuous twins. And so we get some more of that and their creepy family, who is very Stepford Wives-esque. They have to be very perfect.
Cheryl had a dog that she loved as a child and mysteriously disappeared. It turns out that Jason, her brother, actually murdered the dog, strangled the dog with its leash. And because he was jealous of the attention that Cheryl was lavishing on the dog. So basically, Jason never turned into a zombie. He was just always a monster. And Cheryl kills him.
Well, not only was he jealous, he wanted to have her have something sad happen so he could, quote unquote comforter, console and
just
comforter,
being really manipulative,
really sort of really gross,
single white female kind of thing, and yeah, really.
So she hacks him to pieces,
and I love that she's like, I'm not Cheryl anymore, I'm Blaze. She has this little meltdown, and okay. She's covered in blood, has the knife in her hands. And I like that they refer to, like, she looked like Carrie at the end of the movie, and Roberto Aguirre Sacasa was the one who wrote the remake of Carrie. So
I feel like someone needs to accidentally shoot her with an arrow.
Yeah.
Oops.
Oops.
Friendly fire. Yeah. This book is fantastic. The art is, again, great from Francisco Francavilla, who did a different style for the flashbacky stuff, more of a simple style.
Yeah, it's sort of rudimentary, but it really works. And then
great.
The scenes that I really liked were sort of the high melodrama moments, the bit where Archie comes up to Betty in the forest, and there's some great angles in there, and it's really sort of high color, and there's a lot more detail. You see the stubble on Archie's face. He says, "Who has time to shave during a zombie apocalypse?" And then there's, you know, another great moment where in the flashbacks, Betty finds out from her mother that Polly has been taken away. Mm-hmm. She's in some kind of institution or something. She's where we might not ever see her again. And the look on Betty's face is just so, like, you know, sort of soap opera. She just huge, like, no!
Yeah, this is very much a zombie melodrama, but it's in the best possible way. It's very pulpish.
Yeah,
and I love it. And this is a great issue. I really liked that it delved back into all the screwed up stuff that's going on. Because if they're going to do it, you might as well, you know, do it. And the only bad part is it just never comes out. I mean, how many issues did we get this year?
It was worth the wait, you know.
Yeah, I think we got 4 issues this year.
And I don't necessarily want to see another, you know, artist come in and do a fill-in.
No,
or anything,
it's fine. It's just sad because I always look at the list looking for it and never see it. And I'm happy when it does come out. But yeah, you're right. That shot of Betty screaming about her sister is just a wonderfully, like, 1950s horror-esque shot.
Yeah.
It is kind of a 50s horror book, actually, now that I think about it. It's very much in that tone, but way more screwed up.
Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't know, it's like a Rock Hudson movie or something. It's just very just high emotion. But it's really funny, too. It's genuinely funny.
We even got a little bit of the tempestuous lesbian couple who is no longer a couple.
Oh, right. Because
one of them isn't a lesbian. They pretty much, they gave us everybody, including Commissioner Gordon.
I was about to say, Mr. Lodge still looks like Commissioner Gordon, and that's fine. It's a great design, and he's still a dick. He's like, Archie says, we should have a funeral for everybody. He's like, we have no bodies to bury, you simpleton.
Simpleton is not a word I use enough in my daily life that I really
should,
feel
you
like
should,
I should.
Like you earlier when... your headphones weren't working correctly, I could have called you a simpleton just then.
Yeah, but you blew it.
That would have been appropriate, yeah.
Yeah, I did. I didn't know that it was going to come up. It would have been cool if I did, and then this came up, and then it was the thing, but I ruined the show again.
So there you go. I think this is a great issue, great pick, Paul. Great way to round out the year.
There were some great books this week, but I'm so glad this is back, and it was great that it touched on sort of all the plot lines that we really like, and... You know, it was just a reminder of just how fun this book is.
At the end of this episode, we're going to go through the pick of the weeks by the numbers. And this pick will come into play. Pretty big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty big ways. Mm-hmm. So good job, Paul.
Good. So what else was good this week? What else is on the list? Southern Bastards was almost the pick. This is number 6. This is part 2 of a two-part story, I guess.
The Ballad of Coach Boss.
Yeah, so we're seeing Coach Boss as a kid. They're shades.
Don't try to make me feel bad about Coach Boss, Jason Aaron.
They call him useless. They make fun of his name.
This is right out of the Scalped playbook.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I mean, in a big way, and that, like, here's your hero, but we're not sure if he's really a hero. And then here's the quote unquote bad guy, and you see him from the beginning. You know, here's what he came from, and you know, here's you already see what he becomes. It's
life, right? I mean,
yeah, it's really
no one is purely evil.
No, but you know what? It goes even further, I think, in his books, and we've seen this not in Thor, but like in Scalped and in this, and there's no good guy. He's not even trying to convince you that somebody's a good guy. He's just showing you a character and their development. I mean, like if you go back to Scalped, is Dash a good guy? He's the protagonist, but then yeah, so definitely. But
he's
then
not a good
know,
guy,
right? And then Red Crow, was he a bad guy?
Yes,
was he?
I think they were all bad guys, but you have a certain amount of empathy or sympathy at least.
I would take it a step further. The fact, like, because of the way that they did that, I have a hard time remembering. What I remember is that he was interesting and complex, and that he had a hard time with things. And I tend to forget what it was that made him a bad guy. It's like the Sopranos thing.
The murders and the drug dealing and
no,
the crime.
I know. I get that. But it's like the Sopranos thing. Like, you spend time with him, you see, oh, right, his mother was really messed up and he came from that, and his father. And you forget, oh, right, he beat that guy savagely in the first season.
Like, the sympathetic stuff rises to the top.
It does.
And
I find
the other stuff, you don't, it isn't lent as much weight. It's like a lot of people had trouble with, like, Breaking Bad. Like, you know, I don't like this character. But then some people who really latched onto it, like, oh, yeah, he did do some really screwed up stuff.
Yes.
So I mean, I can understand both ways. And the same thing with, like, Don Draper. It's that's the era that we're in.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, the coach boss that we saw in the first arc seems like a fairly unforgivable character.
He's a monster.
Yeah, and even in this, like, he's, you know, like, he's not a good guy. You don't really like him, but you can sort of admire his grit, I suppose.
You know, the thing I think was important is we get that cut back to the present where he's overseeing.
Which I didn't get at first.
I didn't either. I had to go back.
It's the white in Big's hair, right?
Yeah, and it's pretty clear now. I just didn't know
once
what
you get
into
it. Like. Yeah, but then you're like, man, there's some messed up short shorts. I don't like that guy.
Those are straight up though. That's accurate.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It was
just terrifying.
Like, the angle. It was, man. Those are some tight short shorts. Dick.
I think Latour really did the job on those.
Oh yeah.
Well, I think the main thing for me is that it's really interesting to see where he comes from. But at the end of the day, he's still a murderous crime boss. So I'm not going to feel sympathy for him, even if his dad was a dick and he wanted the only thing that made him sympathetic in this is they really wanted to play football.
Yeah. True,
and
he wanted to play football. He wanted to impress his dad, who had no interest in him whatsoever.
But you can also look at, like, this guy had no chance of being a good guy.
True, but that doesn't make him less of a bad guy, though.
Not at all. Not at all, but it makes him interesting.
It has dimension to it.
It makes me want to read and know about him where as opposed to just the pure bad guy, you don't really.
And it speaks of a larger story that this kind of stuff is cyclical. Like, the way you said it, Josh, was, or maybe Connor said, no one's entirely evil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I tell you something.
I think it's sort of like nobody starts out.
No evil. One's born evil except for Damien.
Well, I do know that if I ever walked into my trailer and there were several rednecks having sex and my dad was in a bathrobe holding his dick, pointing a gun at me, and there were chickens.
Everywhere.
I'd go, all right, I guess there's not much point to any of this.
I'm just going to say there were two women in that room.
Yeah.
And there were three guys, and there were chickens.
That's an MMMFC. MMMFFC.
CC.
CC.
There's a tab to slot ratio that...
Well, that chicken there.
Where was that going?
Pretty sexy. Look,
have you never seen pornography, Paul?
Because there's endless. No, but I'm saying, like, that opens up whole new avenues. There are a lot of different possibilities here. It's asymmetrical, so
I'm not saying,
all the more.
I'm not saying they're having sex with the chickens. I'm just saying the mere presence.
I'm also not saying they're not.
Right.
I can't definitively say either way.
We all read Preacher. It's not.
I did like the Mr. Miyagi-esque training that Coach Boss goes through.
Yeah.
The blind fishing and trying to tackle a tree. I did enjoy that.
I'm going to go so far as to say, like, it's a little goofy, but it doesn't matter because we are all, I think, generationally trained to be like, yep.
Yep. Yeah. That
okay.
Montage.
It works.
Yep.
Yeah. I get it. Mr. Miyagi, stick, whoever, this guy.
A crazy old man comes and makes you do weird shit to train to become something else.
You know?
So that's normal. I'm just waiting for it to happen to me one day.
Oh, he'll win then.
The Rocky movies.
We know he wins.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, But he does eat. I mean, he ultimately in his life, but as a kid, it ends, you know, tragically. He's not able to play football because one of his dad's enemies shoots him in the foot right before
the
big
victory,
game.
His victory is he's going to be on special teams. And then
he makes the team after the wax on, wax off session. He's all excited to tell his dad. He walks in on his dad being shaken down because his dad stole those chickens. And so then the guy shoots him in the foot because he's not a starter. So what's the big deal anyway?
Yeah, I love that bit that guy is invested in football and he's like, and he loves the running Rebs. And he says, you know, if you were more important to the game, I wouldn't have shot you in the foot. But since you're just special teams, there are other guys who can take your spot. That's all he wanted was to get, you know, to get to that point and be on special teams.
And the saddest thing is that the relative value of the chickens. And I think this is done on purpose and well done, is that the chickens aren't worth that much. And you're talking about an agricultural era. There's chickens everywhere.
They were fighting chickens. They were fighting chickens.
Yeah.
It was like Little Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Little Jerry Seinfeld?
They were special cockfighting chickens.
Little Jerry Seinfeld.
It's like if they were like pit bulls or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I guess that makes more sense.
They were a whole mess of fighting chickens.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. That makes more sense.
Tutwiler. Also, there's fucking Ron's smiling face at me in the letter stage.
Yeah. That kind of freaked me out.
It's like, I know that guy.
I was on a plane.
So, yeah. I mean, this book continues to be really good. And, it was funny because I thought for some reason that maybe the last issue was like a one shot look at the character. Mm-hmm. So when I started this one, I really had to. Did I read this? And I went back and I was like, "Oh, I didn't read. I didn't."
Also, and as you mentioned, it's really hard to find. I know people ask about, you know, sports comics. Jason Latour's, you know, like just the way he depicts the training and everything. Like it doesn't look like a foosball table. It looks like
interstitial shots of the action. Also, mm-hmm.
These guys like football.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're Southern.
I know, but like in that sort of way that lends a real credibility to it. I don't know enough about football other than know, well, this sounds very authentic. This sounds like they know what they're talking about and is, you know.
Well, it's not just loving football. It's they both understand the small town Southern football culture,
yes,
which is really authentic here. Mm-hmm. So that's
then,
really,
you know, the level of corruption, the weird priorities. And then, oh, and I just wanted to mention that the great bit where he's running into the tree. And you think back on the first arc, mm-hmm, and, you know, what happens with that tree. And it's sort of like, you know, everybody has their tree that they have to come butting up against. And what does that do to you? So
the metaphorical tree.
Metaphorical tree. Also, not everybody has the metaphorical tires covered in barbed wire and being chased by a dog.
You not?
I don't.
Oh, you didn't grow up in Maine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
So, Josh, Astro City 18. It's gonna be
I loved this.
Yes,
I love this so much. I'm
glad you weren't having a stroke just there.
No. I feel like I started thinking about it. I was like, are we in real time with this? Because the character is Cracker Jack, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The character Cracker Jack had shown up in the original series, you know, long ago. 93? No, later than that. Hey, about that. And so is it just 20 years later? Are we sort of in real time with that? Like he's in his 50s now and he's getting paunchy and beat up. And that's super interesting to me and really cool because that is the opposite of what happens in Marvel and DC Comics.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the cover is fantastic.
This is the best Alex Ross work I've seen in quite some time.
And it's all about the aging superhero, right?
It's like Constantine, right? Like...
Yeah,
up until the real one. Yeah, the real one. That's why I caught myself and said time.
Yeah,
and I think that's a really interesting concept to explore. Is these are people have been doing this for a long time. It's not as easy as it used to be. They're slower. They get hurt more in battle.
It takes forever
to recover from the fight at the end of the night. They don't come back to the house and have crazy adrenaline. We almost died sex because they're too
really
tired.
Hammered that part home. They're totally not going to. They should fall asleep at the end. Jeez.
I actually didn't really need the flashback to her childhood.
I just want to
explore more the idea of the aging superhero.
I agree. And sure that was
this is an arc, so we'll get more of that. But
that wasn't bad at all. And I would love to see Cracker Jack. I don't remember if we've ever seen Cracker Jack's origin because it's been 20 years and I forget. But yeah, I liked that first part a lot more. And the party with all the superheroes. If I had any complaints, so I think Brent Anderson did a pretty good job with Cracker Jack and having him appear to be older, but I don't think he was very good at showing the lady
They still can't bring themselves to draw unattractive women.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. Like, oh, she's like a 35-year-old, very attractive woman. And I think he could have gone an extra step or two, especially since, you know, she's wearing all the armor and stuff.
Right.
She so when she takes it off, like, he can, you know, he could do a little more with that. And, you know, she can be in shape and everything, but I don't think that that was depicted well enough. And I think there was a really good opportunity for it there. Because to see something you don't normally see in comics, mm-hmm. which I think is what Kurt Busiek was going for.
Mm-hmm.
Even so, just from a storytelling standpoint, really great. And you're not kidding about that cover. That cover was that was great. And it just
once I read the little blurb and saw the cover, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, did I rub my hands together? Like, let's go, let's do this.
Yep. So. It's just this still continues to deliver, just like that. First and second miniseries, man. It's really cool.
Thor number 3. Let's talk about Russell Dauterman.
Yeah. I think that's the real story here. As fun as the story is, this guy's really, really good. He's really good at action sequences and depicting magic.
Like, he was really good on the Cyclops first arc that we read. but this is like another level Russell Dauterman.
Yeah.
I think that him and Matthew Wilson work really well together. It was a really cool looking issue, and I will never tire of two gigantic dumb beings interacting with smaller, smarter beings.
Yeah.
There was one little bit where Malekith is trying to break through the door that's enchanted, and there's his red magic flying everywhere, and I didn't know what I was looking at.
Yeah, there's a couple of those pages.
And that was my only complaint where I didn't know if it was Thor or what the hell was going on.
Like he's still, you know, in a relatively new. So he's still got some issues to work on. Like, I didn't like his Thor splash at the end. When Thor appears.
Thor's giant nipple?
I just didn't think it was as good as the rest of the issue. But he still does some fantastic sequences in here. I think his character works really strong for the most part.
Did we know about the Thor arm prior to this?
I think it happened in a book we didn't read.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I don't like.
You don't like that?
I don't need Mecha arm Thor.
No, but I did like the Malekith has Thor's arm on him. Which I just like, that's messed up. I know how comic books work, but it would have been stronger if they just put it in here.
With the arm that, you know, that like ties it in with Old King Thor, mm-hmm. I kind of like leaving that a mystery.
Yeah.
Like, oh shit.
Yeah.
That's like a permanent thing.
Yeah. Like, I'd rather think some real bad shit goes down in the intervening thousands of years we're never going to read. You know, that's more interesting to me than
that's
to see his
far more interesting. Yeah. Which, you know, that's the Wolverine lesson that Marvel refuses to learn.
And they just can sort of over-explaining like everything. They can sort of time travel it away. You know, right. or forget about it, or forget it's a thing. You know, in
I
the next run.
This should be our Thor, though.
Yeah,
yeah.
They'll probably Luke Skywalker it.
I do like the idea of Thor showing up at the end and being like, "Where, like, you know, give me my hammer back." And the whole issue leading up to that is her doing some really dope stuff with the hammer. Like, it's clearly hers now. Mm-hmm. You know, and.
Well, she doesn't really do anything with the hammer. The hammer does it on its own.
Well, yeah.
But she also deals without the hammer, which is
cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that part's cool, but the she rips the door open. The hammer does all the fighting on its by itself.
Mm. I really like the sequence of my eyes. Wait, what's happening to my eyes? That's just nice.
What I really like is the duality of Thor's personality. The Lady Thor is, you know, whoever it is inside has the thought bubble, and then when she talks, she speaks as Thor. So I like she's basically a multiple personality scenario going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun. It's interesting. It's almost like I'm pretending to be this person, so I've got to show that I'm confident outside, but inside I'm freaking the hell out. And also, I like that since she's got thought bubbles, everybody else gets to have them too. And I just like the thought bubble.
Your thought bubble can be fun.
It can be. It can be abused, and it's not being abused here.
No.
I don't have a lot of patience for it normally, but I'm like, okay, I'm good with this. I'm enjoying it here as it keeps going even more.
It's good.
It's just they put a bunch of people in a small box that have gigantic powers, and some of them are gigantic, and just let them wreak havoc. It was a good time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You guys check out Bitch Planet number one?
No.
No? This was neat. This is a good start. This is it's very much futuristic, sort of Orange is the New Black. When women commit crimes or really are non-compliant is the way they put it, and they have like temporary tattoos apparently for non-compliant. They are sent to another planet. It's a prison planet. It's a very grindhouse kind of idea, and I liked that setup quite a bit. I think we still have time to really meet these characters, but they're there for various reasons. There's one very, very large woman. They spend a lot of the time naked in sort of a prison riot at the beginning when they're being like deloused, basically, and they rage against their guards. And there's an interesting setup here where you have a white woman who is there against, well, they're all there against her will, but she's like what do they call him? Tubby fat ass in Shawshank Redemption. She's like, I'm not supposed to be here, and they're saying this is the one who's going to break first. And parallel action down on Earth, there's a guy saying, my wife is up there and she shouldn't be there. It was all a misunderstanding, and I had this affair and everything. And you think, oh, he's trying to save her and get her back, when really it's he's trying to save his mistress who was sent there because of a technicality. And she comes back and they end up basically erasing her, killing her in the prison system and making it look like, you know, an accident or it was another prisoner, even when another prisoner comes to her aid. And so you lose the white character who could have been the protagonist, like in Orange is the New Black, but this isn't that Lily White version of the prison story. So it's a lot of different women of color and different, you know, shapes and sizes in there for different reasons. And one is there because she volunteered to come in. And so we'll get to see more of that story, but it's an interesting world. And I'm curious to see where they go with it. This obviously has been anticipated for a while, and I think it is a very cool concept and a nice ensemble. There aren't really male main characters at all. There are, like, sort of in that Oz sense, there's a bit of a Greek chorus with the guys who are like monitoring the prison. And they're basically there just to comment on things. And I think that's an interesting device too.
Who's the artist?
Who is the artist? I have
it right here. How is the
Valentine DeLandro. I like it quite a bit. It reminds me of, what does it remind me of? There's a dot pitch thing going on, but also it reminds the Azzarello book, 100 Bullets.
So like Eduardo Risso.
Like Risso, yeah. And that era of Risso too. But maybe that's also just like the subject matter and the level of violence that's going on that's making me think about that. Very heavy line. It looks like it would be like a Vertigo book from, you know, 7-8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of the feel. That's sort of the vibe that I get. But I like it quite a bit. I thought it was really good.
Cool. So the holiday season's coming up. Well, we're in it, but the holidays are coming up. We are mere weeks away from Christmas. If you're trying to get some last-minute shopping in, please go to ifanboy.com/Amazon. Click through the link there to go to Amazon, make your purchases, and we get a little piece of that action. You know, the last-minute shopping's happening. I was doing it furiously a couple days ago.
Mm-hmm.
So
except
if you need
it's not last-minute. You've got
for
weeks
me it is
to go.
Because I'm out of pocket for the next couple of weeks. I have to get everything done by... Anyway, no one needs to know about this.
You can order shit from your phone. I want to see some real last-minute stuff.
Well, for me, this is last-minute. I'm just saying, if you're listening to this show a week from when we're recording, you're getting close to last-minute shopping.
For responsible people, it's last-minute shopping.
So if you need to do that, Amazon's a great way to do that. ifanboy.com/Amazon's a great way to use Amazon, and we appreciate everyone who does that, especially at the time of year where a lot of shopping is going on. So thank you, everyone. As well as people who go to ifanboy.com/registration, who were for $3 a month to $30 a year, you can become an iFanboy member. and help the show out directly. And we really appreciate everyone. With this, the last show of the year, we thank everyone who does that, keeps the show going, makes this very podcast possible by doing both of those things. And we thank you very much. You. Now, I don't know why in Avengers and X-Men Axis number 7, Deadpool was written like a flower child from the 60s because he's narrating the book, but I'm fine with it because it was really funny. I mean, he's like full-on hippie child. And I don't know if that's happened earlier or in another book, but it's really a fun contrast when you have the narrator speaking like he's on Haight-Ashbury in the 60s.
Well, talking
about this giant battle.
This, I mean, the villains and heroes are at a point where they're slightly altered, right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe instead of being, you know, hyper-violent, Deadpool is, you know...
Hyper-loving.
Hyper-loving. Hyper.
Yeah, that's happening in his own book.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it works here because the whole crux of this issue is him trying to save Apocalypse, who, if you recall from before, was his little buddy in the X-Factor book, Uncanny X-Factor.
Uncanny X-Factor, yeah.
So he's turned full-on villain here as Apocalypse, so he's trying desperately to get him back. So it works that his for the personality, but it was a funny dichotomy of having him in the middle of the battle scene and everybody get together, try to love one another right now because they're not. This is funny. This is like Rick Remender at his sort of zaniest best. And they've reined it in a bit since the first issue, which was a little too zany, but this was a really good issue, really fun issue. Mm-hmm. There you go.
So, hey, how about some British country gentleman animals?
Wild's End number 4, I continue to love this book, and I hate that it's going to end soon. But this just continues to be so much fun, and we do get to see what happens in the other parts of the map that were teased earlier. And we're getting a lot of action from these aliens. We also see what happens when you kill one of the aliens, shoot it with a shotgun, the glass breaks on this very H.G. Wells style tentacle. I shouldn't say tentacle, but like robotic tentacle alien. There's like a little.
It's like War of the Worlds alien.
It's like War of the Worlds alien. That's what I was looking for. It's sort of a Johann Schmidt kind of vapor comes out and goes up into the atmosphere. But what happens after that, we don't know. And continually interesting to find out more about Mr. Slipaway and, you know, no, the Navy isn't just the army with boats and he's seen things. And when they get to another village and people are missing and they say, well, no, they've been killed by the aliens. And they're like, no, stop. Don't say that. Don't say such horrible things. And he was probably right. And he's like, I deal in practicalities. It was just the ever stoic Mr. Slipaway.
They also make it to the pub finally.
They make it to the pub, which they've been trying to get
down to the pub finally. Dang.
Yeah. That's what the fox probably sounds like, Mr. Yeah. Fox. That voice, that and it's written that way, and it's not annoying. It's just, you know, I like it. And what I also liked is
that's why I can't read this. I would just spend way too much time trying to figure.
I like reading it out loud. I have fun with it. And
I used to do that with Hellblazer, like a lot.
Yeah,
because I'm trying to figure out the voice exactly for me, and I never quite got it.
And just real quick, I just wanted to mention that the cat. The lady cat who's an author, is a chain smoking cat, apparently ghost wrote some books for her ex-husband and they were science fiction. Her own proclivity is to do like, you know, literature, straight literature, but the husband would write stuff for Future Amazement Tales, which we get an excerpt from in the back of the book, and they do a mock-up cover from August 1933. There's a guy who looks sort of like a John Carter, Flash Gordon kind of character who's a tiger, and there's like a llama. Sort of Deja Thoris, and there's tentacles and a ray gun, and they give you a little prose stuff, and it's Alien Men from the Moon, An Adventure of Captain Syracuse by Lewis F. Kornfelt. Tom Syracuse pits himself against the immortal aliens from the moon who intend to reclaim their birthright as gods over all of us by the author of A Martian Travesty, 10 Rockets to Antarctica, and The Ending of Forever. I just love this whole milieu. I think it's just so endearing and fun, and I continue to love the art as well.
Well, that would be a good way to describe Batgirl 37. I've come to a place where I mean, this book makes no sense in the greater context of the DC universe, but I've come to a place where I don't really. It's fine. Like, it's just, I just put it in its own little bubble. Its own little.
I mean, they're gonna be doing that, the convergence thing, and there's all these really fun stories happening with great creative teams. I was like, why don't you do this all the time?
Right.
It'd be so much more fun than just trying to stick to a continuity that's just that people don't seem to like.
Yeah, and I mean, the Black Canary in this book makes no sense whatsoever, but it doesn't matter. It's in the context of this story, it's fine. I just deal with that. And but this is fun. This was like a Banksy-type artist decides to co-opt Batgirl as an image for their art and performance art and their paintings. And so she doesn't like that because someone's stealing her image, and they start going out on the street as Batgirl. I thought this was a really fun look at modern celebrity culture and art culture. And I thought this was really super fun. I think this is maybe the best issue so far.
It's a really fun book. I like it a lot. It's the one thing, there are times where, as much as I enjoy how much they pack into each issue, I do wish they would kind of slow down a little bit and get more into all of the friend characters and even Babs a bit. Like, just slow down for some, I don't know, like Batgirl Year One kind of.
It's definitely moments. They're all fast-paced, action-packed.
It's very fast, and that can be fun. But maybe like have one issue at the end of the arc or something where you just ease up.
Well, Paul, now that you're entering your 30s, you'll find that the things the kids like are too fast and confusing for you.
I do sound like an old man. I also enjoyed this week the Valiant number one from Valiant Comics. We haven't talked about a Valiant book
in a while.
That
makes sense.
Yeah, but it's It's a big, huge crossover from all the different Valiant characters. The Eternal Warriors in here, that's sort of a big part of it. You get one moment with Exo Man of War, Archer and Armstrong are all going to play a role, and it's all about these geomancers. I think the big thing to write home about is Paolo Rivera art, and it's super gorgeous, and he goes through all these different eras, and basically, the Eternal Warrior idea, this guy Jalad, there's always this warrior, and whether it's Viking times or the Crusades, any kind of warring period, he's there as a warrior, and there's this always a monster, too, who has this sort of cow skull face, even if it's concealed inside another face, and it takes on the properties and dimensions of the fears of that time. And so at one point there's a child who thinks, oh no, it's the Grendel. So it's from the, you know, the Beowulf, oral history and that sort of legend. But it reveals itself ultimately to be this horrible creature that has been following Jalad all this time. And Jalad always has a geomancer backup, you know, sort of a sorcerer or mage or something, and it comes in a different form, and they always end up getting killed. All of his compatriots get killed, and he fails. And so now the monster is coming back, and it's time to, you know, do something about this and hopefully not have, you know, Bloodshot and Exo Man of War and Archer and Armstrong and all of those characters end up dead, because that is the sort of the prophecy. That is the pattern that's been following. But it's a really cool book, and if you haven't read any of the Valiant books, it's sort of a good way to get introduced to that. I think it feels new reader friendly, and Paolo Rivera, it's beautiful stuff.
So those are the books we're going to talk about this in the final Pick of the Week podcast of the year. If you can go to fanboy.com, you can find the post for this show. You can talk about these books, other books that came out this week. You can find all of our shows to do all your talking at ifanboy.com. And as I've mentioned many times, since this is the last show of the year, and I keep saying that because I don't want someone to freak out. I thought we would do the Pick of the Week by the Numbers, which is an old feature we used to do on the website, where we would look at all the iFanboy picks of the week, break them down with the stats, so we could see how biased Josh really is.
And only Connor put these together. Josh and I have not seen these.
Right. So it should be fine.
Them, but
he's teased them to us.
Well, I literally was putting together this moments before the show, so I was going to actually send them to you, but I didn't.
So yeah, I know nothing about these numbers, so this
would be. We could have looked and done it ourselves, but.
And actually, it's actually really interesting this year.
Okay.
So we break it down by a couple categories. First, there were 50 picks this year, which is pretty much normal. That was the same number we had last year. Mm-hmm. That's because we take the final 2 weeks of the year off. Of those 50, I had 18, Paul had 17, and Josh had 15.
This is the first year where I've been
where you had all
the full year.
That's right. Ron had
took
two
over
last
in like
year.
April or something last
no,
year.
No, early, because Ron only had two last year.
Ron started in January.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so this was your first full year. So you had 17, first full year, right. 17 picks. You did 34% of the iFanboy picks this year.
Okay.
And so that breaks it down. Actually, this is where it starts getting interesting. So last year, by company, we had six different companies that got a pick of the week. This year, we had an increase of 50%. We had nine different companies.
Wow. No shit.
Pick of the week book. Yeah, nine. So we had coming in at number one, Image Comics. Now, this was the year we had a lot of Image picks, right? So you would have thought Image blew the numbers away. Is that what you guys would think?
Well, the way you're putting it.
I think they would have made a stronger showing in the past than in the past, but probably not. Majority.
Image had 15 as the number one publisher, but only one ahead of DC Comics with 14.
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, that would
In years past, I would have asked what the Vertigo SKU was, but this year, I guess that's...
The Vertigo SKU is only three.
Yeah.
There's only three Vertigos this year. So Image had 15, DC had 14, Marvel had 12, Archie had 4, and then Boom Studios, Dark Horse, Dynamite, IDW, and Panel Syndicate all had
Panel
one each.
Is, yeah. We had a new publisher this year in Panel Syndicate, so...
Well, I think we had them last year as well.
Were they around for last
year?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. This year we added, let's see, Archie and Boom and Dynamite. Those are the three we added this year. So this we spread them out pretty well. The highest percentage was 30%. So Image had 30% of the picks, which is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually, the theme is going to be well-balanced year is what I was getting at, because this is a very well-balanced year. So let's look at individuals. Josh,
yes.
You had... Seven Image picks out of your 15.
Barely.
So 50% of almost 50% of your picks were Image Comics this year.
Yep. They released a new series every 8 minutes.
Followed by Marvel with 4, DC with 2, Dynamite and Dark Horse with 1 each. That was Josh's breakdown. My breakdown was out of my 18, 9 or 50% exactly were DC.
Yeah.
4 were Marvel, 3 were Image, 2 were Archie. And Paul had the greatest number of different publishers. You had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Wow.
Publishers. And your number one, Image with 5 of your 17. So your highest percentage was only 29% of your picks. So you had a very well-balanced year. 5 from Image, 4 from Marvel, 3 from DC, 2 from Archie, and 1 from Boom, IDW, and Panel Syndicate each. So you had no percentage higher than 29%.
I tried to spread the love around a bit.
Yeah, you did. You did
it's a good thing you're the one who's actually running a comic book website still.
So we had a really... pretty well balanced. Josh and I each had one publisher dominate, but still pretty strong. Now, if you go by series, in the past, usually there's some front runner series, although last year we didn't have one. We had a three-way tie for first. Now, this is where your pick today comes in, Paul. The most picked book was Afterlife with Archie.
Nice.
With three picks, tied Batman. Those are the two most picked books this year. So we had a tie between DC and Archie Comics, which is pretty crazy.
Take that, Didio.
And we also have there were only six books this year, which is the same as last year, that were picked twice or more. So if you look at all...
Six books that were chosen two or more times.
Right.
Okay, can I try and guess those?
Mm-hmm. We've already given you two.
So Batman and Afterlife with Archie.
Mm-hmm.
Thor?
Yes.
Private Eye?
No.
No?
There's only one.
There's only one. Okay.
There's a lot of good books this year that I don't think we picked a lot.
Southern
so that's
Bastards?
Why that makes this hard.
No, none of these books are Image. I'll tell you that. I'll give you a hint. They're all Marvel. All the rest.
Okay.
Superior Foes?
Nope.
There's only one. What did we like from that company again?
How many do we need?
Three. You got Afterlife with Archie,
Batman, and Thor.
The three remaining are all from Marvel.
Daredevil?
Yes.
Daredevil. Avengers.
Nope.
Avengers.
All new X-Men?
Nope.
Why don't we remember them if we liked it so much?
Do you want hints?
Yeah.
No.
One of them featured a character who starred in a movie this summer.
Oh.
Oh, Rocket Raccoon.
Yes.
They got two?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. One and whatever that last one I did.
Yep. The last one is a lawyer book.
She-Hulk. Oh, the Shulk.
Actually, two lawyer books in the top six.
Daredevil and She-Hulk. Cool.
So Afterlife with Archie and Batman won the year with 3 picks each, followed by Daredevil, Rocket Raccoon, She-Hulk, and Thor: God of Thunder, all tying with 2 picks each. Everybody else got picked once. It was crazy. Hmm. So now we have a clear winner for the most picks by a writer. That's not even close. This year, 7 writers were picked twice, as opposed to 13 last year. So this year, much more consolidated.
Jason Aaron.
Jason Aaron came in second.
Scott Snyder.
Charles Soule. Scott Snyder.
Scott Snyder had 6 picks of the week this year.
My word.
12% of all the picks were written by Scott Snyder, followed by a 3-way tie for second between Jason Aaron, Recommender, and Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa.
Sacasa, right.
And in a 3-way tie for third, Charles Soule, Mark Waid, Scotty Young. Huh. Yeah, so that was interesting. Artists, we had 6 artists whose books were picked more than once.
Francesco Francavilla.
Obviously.
Greg Capullo.
Chris Somney.
Chris Somney was... Francavilla won. He got 3 books for the 3 Archie books. And then, so then it was a 5-way tie for second. Chris Somney, Greg Capullo, Javier Pulido, Matteo Scalera, and Scotty Young.
He needs to fucking stop it.
Scalera got in with
2 books.
A Black Science and a Batman.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And I'm just getting my screen to come back. And then the number ones. We like number ones here. So this year I added a new twist to the number ones tally. So last year we picked 16 number ones. This year, 12. And they included the Multiversity, Pax Americana. And some of these are number one only by...
Right.
Yeah.
But that's really the only one like that. The Multiversity, Pax Americana, Low, Wild's End, The Wicked and the Divine, Southern Bastards, She-Hulk, American Vampire, Second Cycle, God Hate Astronauts, Deadpool's
American
Art
Vampire,
of...
That's not a real number one.
Right, but that's still number one. Deadpool's Art of War, The Fade Out, All New Invaders, and Ragnarok. Those were the number ones we picked this year. So I broke it down, because we never broke it down before, to see who really likes number one issues and from what companies. The number one person who picked the most number ones. Interesting. You both think it's you. Really interesting. It's me. With 5.
Huh. What we've learned from this is that we don't know anything. So if we are following patterns, we're certainly not doing it on purpose.
No.
I can start listening to the show again.
We're not smart enough to follow those patterns.
Here's the thing. It's interesting that you both thought it was you. I had 5, Paul had 4, Josh had 3. All very close, all within one of each other.
I was like, I took them all the time.
But out of say 15 picks, only 3 of them were number one. I would have thought I get bored easily and want to see a new thing. And then
out of those 12, you only picked 3 of them.
Yeah, no, I get that. That's and that's out of my 15. So that's 20%.
And now here's the interesting thing: which company do you think had the most picks?
Well, it's not Image, I guess.
Marvel.
It was Image with 5.
Well, that makes sense.
The Fade Out, God Hates Astronauts, Southern Bastards, The Wicked and the Vine, and Low. So 10% of all the picks were Image number ones, followed by Marvel with 3, DC with 2.
A bunch of those were me, wasn't it?
Well, Low was you. Wicked and the Divine was you.
God Hates Astronauts.
I did Fade Out, too.
The Fade Out.
Southern Bastards was Connor?
It was... Well, Paul, you only had 4, so it couldn't have been... Image had 5, so one of them wasn't you. But 3 of them at least were you.
But yeah.
That's how it broke down. Those are the numbers.
Who didn't pick Blackest Night? That wasn't this year.
So I thought this was a very well balanced year. We had 9 publishers. Between the 3 of us, we spread out the love. There was no clear winner for book in past years. I thought this was a good year for the pick.
Everybody got a taste.
And what it really does show is we don't really pay attention from week to week what we're picking. So if there was a conspiracy amongst us.
I have noticed that there are less people saying, oh, you always just pick DC books, or you just always talk about Marvel books. We don't really get that much anymore.
I think we've beaten those people down into submission. Either they stop listening or they just stop complaining. Mm-hmm. But you're right. I mean, like, that was just
funny because it was because 1 year, I don't know if it was 2-3 years ago, or it was someone complained about Marvel 1 week, and then the next week we were like, you always just talk about DC.
Oh, that happened every week. For a little while, that was a constant thing. But that was when both of them were in a lot of upheaval. So like at a certain point we're getting out of it, but at a certain point we were really down on DC as a whole, and I still think we kind of are, but those bright spots keep
I think that was pre-New 52
pre-post well, they had, it's been they had, the entire length of our 9 years.
Well, the thing is, they had a really fallow period for the 8 or 9 months leading up to New 52. Mm. And then
we didn't know why until we found out.
Right. And then afterwards, like the first sort of, it was interesting. The sort of first month obviously was interesting. So we talked about all the number ones and stuff. And there was at least things to think about. And then it was like, oh, I see what they're doing now. And there was very little to grab onto for us. Mm-hmm.
And there was also a year where we weren't reading hardly any Marvel books.
Yes, that's true.
I remember doing the stats for that year, and Josh had like hardly any Marvel picks because it was a tough year. It's cyclical, and
we're probably not reading a lot of like DC's output, but like, you know, you've got Greg Pak and Aaron Cooter on Action Comics, and you've got, you know, sort of interesting stuff happening in Batman right now, and you know, there's cool stuff here and there, which seems normal actually, really. Like, this is a little more like it used to be, I think, as opposed to sort of the line wide house artist and sort of, you know, thing that they seem to be doing mostly. There's definite bright spots.
Cool. I think it was good. I think it was nice to see that we had a lot of different. I like to see Archie in a lot of these lists. I like to see that we got, and almost every major publisher got a pick.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
And there's no coordination. There's no discussion about it. I don't know what the pick is until it's chosen by the other guys. So I think it's good to see that when it shakes out, it's pretty. I mean, obviously the big two are going to be up there and Image is up there, but it's nice to see everyone.
Here's the thing. The pick of the week, I mean, and people kind of know this, but it either makes itself very obvious to us right away if you're the person reading them. And so there's not really many ways around it. You read your books and you go, oh, that was the one. Or you have to think about it. And this, when you think about it, as soon as you come down on it, you go, oh, right. And then it once again is very obvious. Like, it, either way that you approach it, you either smacks you in the face right away. There's usually not much question. I can't remember coming away from a show and going, that shouldn't have been the pick. You know, like the truth will out, I suppose, is how it sort of usually works, at least for the person picking.
The one thing I wanted to ask you guys is, thinking about it, and I don't have all the stats in front of me, so I can't look at it, but I don't think I ever got the, I had the opportunity to, but I never got to pick Ms. Marvel as my pick of the week. And I love that book. That's one of my favorite books of 2014. And it would get, you know, beat out that week by some other book.
Or you wouldn't have the pick when it came out. The thing is,
exactly.
The pick of the week is only a reflection of that particular week and that particular person who has the pick. I mean, it doesn't reflect.
It's a random sampling.
It doesn't reflect the best books. You know, it's because we used to get this complaint a lot. You know, why didn't you ever pick this book? Well, because it's like it's almost like a slot machine, right? So you've got three different spinning wheels, and it's the person with the pick, the book that comes out, and how the quality of that particular issue or whatever else is out that week, and they all have to line up, and they don't always line up. Mm-hmm. There's lots of books I love. I've never made the pick because just I never had the book, the pick when that book came out, or that particular issue I had it wasn't the best issue that week. It's just there's so many variables that go into what gets that pick. It doesn't reflect. You couldn't take top picks and make those the best. Although I guess, you know,
you could look at if you sort of go across. I mean, if you go across sort of the books that we all really enjoyed this year, we've each got our own favorites for whatever. You know, like, you know, for me, pretty much every issue of Black Science that came out was magnificent, or every issue of Lazarus, or every issue of Minimum Wage. But there weren't picks of all those.
Right.
You know, if at the most there's one. You know. That's just timing.
Yeah.
And circumstance.
It's interesting. It's definitely interesting. So those are your picks of the week stats, your picks of the week by the numbers. We'll be back with those next year for next year's picks. Until then, this is the last show of the year. And
we've recorded. You're going to hear something else.
Last pick of the week show of the year. Next week, you'll have the all-media year-end roundup with me, Josh Flanagan, and Mike Romo talking about the year that was in film, television, books, podcasts, video games and comics.
Just hours
of talking. So that'll be next week. That'll have to hold you through the holiday season because we won't be back until January 11th with episode 467 of the Pick of the Week. So there'll be a lot for you to dig into that show.
And I get to listen to the all media year end show this year because I wasn't on it. So I'm excited to see what you guys liked.
I mean, there's an unfortunate part where Mike just goes on a racist rant, but other than that, it's a it'll be a fun show for everybody.
What did Kuala Lumpur do to him?
So check that out next week. You find that on the feed just as you would this show. You can find it at the website. It'll all be there. And you can find it at ifanboy.com where you can talk about this show. You can talk about this week's books. You can talk about all the skeletons in your closet. You want to make some confessions? We'll take them. We will take them.
I'm pregnant.
We'll find all of our other podcasts there as well. The all media show will be there. Past shows, the special edition shows we did on all the TV shows, they'll all be there at ifanboy.com.
And I totally just opened something in front of the thing I was supposed to. Sorry. Follow iFanboy at twitter.com/iFanboy, facebook.com/iFanboy, or you can follow us individually at C.S. Kilpatrick, Fuzzy Typewriter, and J.A. Flanagan. Did I mention I've had 4 hours of sleep?
After all these years, we still need the script desperately.
Plain sleep. No, it was like he went quiet, and I was like, yeah. I just moved a window in front of it. Now I'm getting fuzzy beach ball, and I'm just going to read through it straight.
Fuzzy Dunlop. And finally, if you dig this sort of thing, you can write us a review in iTunes. Or better yet, you can tell your friends about us. Introduce your cousin Eustace to podcasts. Help us spread that iFanboy love around the Christmas tree, around the menorah, around everything.
It's a good show to have on while you're decorating a tree.
We've had people say that they've been, you know, wrapping presents and they listen to iFanboy. So podcasts are great for that. So enjoy.
And you know, Serial is ending next week. So you'll be able to really get fully back in.
It was so good to have on the train. I had a 4.5-hour train ride both ways, and I needed those Serial episodes. I re-listened. It's like, maybe I missed something.
Wow. I don't think that I could do it that long.
I did other things, but... You
know. I played a lot of Tiny Death Star on my iPad, and that was really helpful to get through like a long overnight flight, but it's a problem. If you've ever played Tiny Death Star, because it's a complete waste of time.
That is it for this week's show. That is it for this year in Pick of the Weeks. We'll be back next week with the All Media Show. We'll be back next year with the Pick of the Week. Until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
I got to get back to Tiny Death Star now.
Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week and next year. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.